Hey Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian, with me as always is Chris, and it's been a couple weeks since we chatted, and there's been a little bit of Mets news, but some news is kind of breaking right now. I hesitate to even call it news, because in spring training, you hear so much about people being sore, people having, you know, dead arm, various, you know, aches and pains coming back after a long off season. And so this could fall into that. This could fall into something bigger. We don't know yet, but Carlos Carrasco apparently has elbow soreness and has had some body aches, which he is attributing to the his second COVID vaccine, which he received yesterday. So on a scale of building on fire to hospital on fire, how is Mets Twitter dealing with this news, Chris?
Closer to the, well, the latter, I think. I had to think about that one for a second. But yeah, no, I understand that any injury news is unwelcome. And I wouldn't even necessarily call it injury news. Injury-related news, I guess.
I guess?
Yeah. So yeah, it's something to monitor, something to maybe legitimately have a little bit of concern about, but I don't know. I'm not ready to freak out just yet. And if Carlos Carrasco is a little bit delayed, you know, over the next few weeks, there's only a few weeks left until opening day. It's not ideal. It's not the most exciting thing in the world, but I don't know. My approach to baseball news these days is basically not to react too strongly to it until there's actual news. So elbow soreness, not ideal, but until we get other updates that would indicate that maybe there's something a little more going on there for him to deal with, I'm ready to just kind of sit back and wait and, I don't know, be excited for his first start, hopefully in hopefully the first turn of the rotation still, but if not, early to mid-April.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's too early to get panicky. I know that this is the Mets, and so, you know, this is something that just happens. People tend to get very worried about all of the anything that could spell slight problem, people get upset about, which, again, I understand it. But let's just pump the brakes here for 1 second, make sure it's actually a thing to get upset about. Because I don't know about you, Chris, there's enough going on in the world that I get legitimately upset about. I want to hold off my Mets anger and frustration until I actually need to be angry and frustrated at the Mets.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, but in real injury news, Jose Martinez has torn his meniscus. I believe his left meniscus, but his left meniscus, and he'll be out for 4 months. Now, Martinez was probably going to be a bench piece for the Mets. He was probably going to be the right-handed thump off the bench, and his injury certainly is bad for him as a person and a player, of course, and also I think bad for the Mets. I think that Martinez could have been a valuable bench piece for them this season, but it's not like a player is going to be playing every single day. It's not like that guy goes down for you, which is obviously the worst case scenario for injuries. But you know, and rumor has it that the Mets are interested in Mikhail Franco. I always feel like I'm mispronouncing his name. It's Mikhail Franco. I feel like every announcer pronounces it differently. Also, do you have any insight on this, Chris?
yeah, I think closer to Michael, but in terms of the overall pronunciation,
right? Michael.
Okay,
I'll go with Michael. So apparently, the Mets are one of many teams interested in Mikhail Franco to basically take that spot as the right-handed bat off the bench. I'd be fine with that as a move. I think that the Mets have enough third basemen already, but he might be the most natural third baseman of the bunch. Not that I expect him to start much because of the other players and bats in the lineup, but any Michael Franco feelings or Jose Martinez feelings?
Well, a little bit, I guess. Neither one would be the ideal player if they were pushed into a starting role, primarily because of defensive limitations. They both have some, you know, track records of major league success as hitters with some struggles mixed in. With Franco, it's been a little more uneven, I think. And, you know, with Martinez, he had been a little more on the consistent side before he struggled more recently. But both right-handed hitters, both capable of hitting for power. And again, both not really ideal fielders in most of the positions that they might play. Bad outfield defense hasn't really stopped the Mets from doing anything before, though. And I don't know. Martinez, one, who knows? Franco, they could sign or not sign. But if they were to sign him, I'd be a little less optimistic. But I don't know. It's not too much different in terms of what you might get out of that player in that role. You know, depending on how they roll out their lineup and align their defense on a daily basis, I would say that even J.D. Davis might end up being a right-handed bat off the bench. Maybe not every day, but somewhat regularly. So if they intend to start the year with Almora in the minors, which is a possibility, it would be nice to have another bat off the bench, even if they are defensively limited. And I don't know. You would think if they signed Franco that he would at least want a major league guarantee or the ability to opt out if he didn't get a major league roster spot. You know, I think Martinez had officially signed a deal where the Mets could either start him in the minors or the majors without him having that option. So
yes, I believe he's signed a split contract.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's not the biggest concern. It just sucks for him that it was a spring training play where he was trying to field a ball at first base and the umpire was there. You know, in terms of baseball injuries, that's got to be among the most frustrating.
Yes.
We are in the season of hearing about everybody's home injuries that affect their spring training. And those are frustrating in their own way. But I don't know. That kind of freak play, I definitely feel bad for him. And he could still be a useful bat for the Mets later this year if his recovery goes smoothly. It's just not a huge blow to the team, whether they sign Franco or not, because it's somebody who may not be on the major league roster on a daily basis, or at least right to start the season.
It's interesting that you're talking about sort of, you know, not being super useful defensively on the bench. I was thinking about this before, and we'll get to this when we discuss the roster a little bit more in depth later, but the Mets are in a weird position this year where they have so many players that are so versatile that even like the Monday through Friday everyday players, those guys, Monday through Friday, what the fuck am I talking about? They're everyday players. I don't know why I decided to throw weekdays in there. The everyday players are, you know, when you look at somebody like Jeff McNeil, McNeil plays second, third, and left field. When you look at Dom Smith, Dom plays left field and first base. J.D. Davis, third base and left field. Jonathan Villar, everywhere on the diamond. Kevin Pillar can play all three outfield positions. They have a team that is already, Guillorme can play all the infield positions. You know, they have a team that is relatively versatile. So when you're looking at the bench and the sort of the last couple spots on the bench, there's not like they have a need for a backup at any one position. The positions you probably want backups at are the positions that unfortunately tend to be the most offensively limiting, like center field or shortstop. But with Guillorme and VR, you really don't need a backup shortstop. And with Almora in the hopefully in the minors and VR can play a little center and Pilar and Nimmo, you don't really need a backup center fielder. I don't know. Like in a perfect world, I don't know what position I would want the last man on the bench to play right now. And I don't think we've ever been in that position before as a team. I can't remember a position like that for this team before. Do you have like, is there one spot on the diamond that you feel is thin and you would like to have a backup available on the bench for?
I guess I sort of conditioned myself to how they ran the offseason and tailored things. So, I don't know. Given the roster they have, I can't say that there's a big desire to have a different format. I'd say if you're building the ideal baseball team, you'd want it to be a little bit different, but it helps that Guillorme is a great, especially with his hands, great defender and can play the three infield positions aside from first base. I mean, I'm sure he could play first base, but,
the Mets have enough first baseman.
Yes. Yeah. That's not really something that we have to be too concerned about. It's a weird scenario, but those things to me don't outweigh wanting the Mets to have eight pitchers in the bullpen, which 5-10 years ago, seven pitcher bullpens hadn't even become all that normal yet, and now sounds kind of weird, but especially this year coming off a just chaotic and then shortened year of baseball when so many of these guys didn't pitch in at least not in 100% game situations. I'd rather not worry too much about what positions the bench bats can play, since I wouldn't want to get to, a point of saying, oh, make the bullpen smaller and get the other positions covered with backups the bench.
Sure.
So, we just have to accept that center field, left field is going to be a little bit ugly, barring a significant defensive improvement from the players who figure to get the most time in those positions.
Right, right.
It's tough because I like the players on this team so much. So you don't want to necessarily see anybody specific go. But I do long for the days of Carlos Beltran, center fielder, when you didn't have to think about realigning your defense late in a game if you had a lead, being something that happened all the time.
Right, right. All right. Well, we also wanted to discuss the most recent and the first batch of spring training cuts that happened. The Mets reassigned 19 players yesterday to minors camp, which this year means even less than it normally does. Of those players, it was mostly the top prospects. It was nice to see some of these guys get some playing time. We got to watch guys like Pete Crow Armstrong and Brett Beatty and Ronnie Mauricio get some bats. It's always good to see that sort of stuff. But those guys, Francisco Alvarez, Matt Allen, they were all shuffled off to the minors camp. I don't even know what they're calling it this year. And then three players, rather, Franklin Killame, Sean Reed Foley, and Thomas Sabucky were all optioned to the AAA roster. Now, of those players, Chris and I were talking before the show, none of them really surprised us, except for one, which is Trevor Hildenberger. He is currently the team leader in strikeouts for the Mets. He has recorded all six of his spring outs by the strikeout. He has not given up a hit yet. He has walked, I think, two batters. But he was having a pretty strong spring, and I know that you're a fan of his work because of your connection to the Twins through your cousin. And so I wasn't sure if you had any real insight on this or were just, you know, similarly kind of flummoxed by the early cut for somebody who's looked pretty good so far.
A little bit of both, I think. I will say I was predisposed to liking Hildenberger when the Mets signed him. So that is probably a little bit of a factor here. And look, we know these cuts feel kind of weird because there isn't a full minor league spring training operating right now. But from everything we've heard from the reporters who are down there, these guys are still going to be in Port St. Lucie. They're still going to be working out, presumably a little bit more on the backfields, probably playing intra-squad games, that kind of stuff. So they can still get their work. They can still appear in Major League spring training games. If not for the COVID restrictions and protocols that were in place right now, if this was just a normal spring training and he had gotten off to this good start, I think it would feel a little bit less weird that Luis Rojas was saying great things about him and the next day he was in minor league camp. But we are where we are, yeah, to use a boring cliche. But it just feels a little weird because one of the relievers who's looked good isn't officially in major league camp anymore. But hopefully he still gets into enough of these games. And if he continues to look good, and if other relievers on the roster don't, he might have an actual shot at making the opening day bullpen.
And we should also mention that he signed a minor league deal.
All these guys, to be fair, have a level of uncertainty, aside from Edwin Diaz, who I guess a lot of people would argue still has a lot of uncertainty attached to him as well. But I don't know. I'm willing to buy that that 2019 was just the outlier. And even though it was a very short season last year, that looked like the guy he was before the Mets traded for him, immediately before they traded for him. So I'm willing to say, you know what? I'm confident in Edwin Diaz, certainly confident in other former Twin, Trevor May. But there's just a lot of question marks after that. You know, if Dylan Betances can't throw 95 plus, and not even sit there, if he can't even get there, I don't know. I don't know if he ends up being a pitcher who you keep on a major league roster. And it sucks. I always liked him even when he was a Yankee, you know. I think one thing over the last 5 to 10 years is I can appreciate good players who are on the Yankees, even though I am not rooting for their team to win.
Right.
And he's always been one of them, but whether it's him specifically, if velocity turns out to be an issue over the next few weeks, and in fairness, he has that time to prove otherwise, you know. Mm-hmm. I just think Hildenberger still has a shot at the major league roster. So
we should also note that he signed a minor league deal with the Mets, and so you know, it wasn't like he had to make the major league roster or the team would lose him. So this might just be a case for now of wanting to give other guys more of a look, and because there are some guys without options that you're going to be left with some difficult decisions to make, as opposed to, you know, Hildenberger, who you can let that story play itself out a little bit less, a little bit more slowly than needing to rush that decision. So I would presume that's maybe why that's happening as well. All right, well, that's going to bring us to the next part of the show. I am I am fully admitting I'm stealing this idea from one of the shows, another SB Nation podcast, which is the True Blue LA podcast. Last week, they tried to predict the Dodgers 26-man roster at the start of the season. So that is our goal today, Chris. You and I are going to attempt to guess the 26-man roster on opening day. I think we should throw a couple of caveats out here. Winner owes the other one a beer next time we can get together in person.
Sure.
because let's make it interesting. You know, we know certain things. Like, we know that Seth Lugo will not be on the opening day roster. We know Noah Syndergaard will not be on the opening day roster. But and there are certain locks that, you know, unless injuries happen, they will be there as well. We are presuming an 8-man bullpen, correct?
Yeah, I think so. There hasn't been anything indicating otherwise recently, I don't think, coming out of Port St. Lucie. There may have been a mention at some point in January or even earlier February that they might go with a 7-man bullpen, but I don't even know for sure that I remember that correctly, and two, it hasn't been something that's been talked about much recently.
Right.
So I think that's a safe assumption. But hey, if we want to predict otherwise, I guess.
Sure, I guess
we can.
Yeah, we're allowed to do that, I suppose. So I was thinking of taking this just like group by group. So let's start with starting pitching. Let's presume that Cookie's elbow is fine, and that he will be on the roster if we want him to be at opening day. Who do you see as the starting five on the opening day roster?
Not necessarily in this specific order, but if Carrasco is healthy, and right now I'll be optimistic enough to say that I think he makes a turn in that first, time through the rotation. So yeah, DeGrom, Carrasco, Stroman, Walker, Peterson is my pick for the fifth spot. I just think, you know, having that incumbency of coming up with the Mets and having a nice debut probably gives him an advantage over Lucchese and Yamamoto, even though it maybe shouldn't. But I think it does to some extent, because despite having changed owners and general managers and all that, you know, there's still a lot of familiar faces around. So they saw Peterson do it firsthand. And I think that tends to be a tiebreaker with baseball people.
I don't disagree with that. But I am going to actually put Lucchese as the fifth man starting out. I have a feeling that there's two things at play here. First of all, they're going to want a lefty in the rotation, and so Lucchese does that. And I also think that with both Lucchese and Yamamoto, they have less options left than Peterson does. And so I think you may see a situation where Lucchese or Yamamoto starts in the rotation early just to give Peterson some time to work on some stuff. And then when they eventually bring him up, that whoever that person is, whether it's Lucchese or Yamamoto, will move to the bullpen so that they don't have to waste an option on one of those guys this season. And so that's why I'm saying Lucchese is my thought for the fifth spot. Though I think Peterson will eventually be in that spot, maybe even a couple weeks or a month later, I could see Lucchese getting the first start. All right. Do you think that, I've seen Yamamoto pitch more this spring than I have Lucchese. Do you have a feeling that one of those guys has a leg up for you?
No, and I haven't really had a chance to catch when they've been pitching, and it's been televised.
Right.
Which, hey, look, if there's a good time to cut back on spring training broadcasts, it is during a pandemic. So I get the frustration, DeGrom pitching in a game that wasn't televised. It's like, oh man, come on. That's,
tomorrow DeGrom pitches again and it's not televised.
Yeah. It's now it feels like they're trolling us.
Yeah.
But I don't have any, so I haven't seen those two pitch in these spring training games so far. But I don't have any strong inclination of one of them having an advantage over the other. I would say that Lucchese has a little bit more of the major league track record, even though both pitchers struggled last year. Mm-hmm. So I guess falling in line with my logic on Peterson, Peterson has the experience, although a much smaller amount of it, in front of the Mets, having been with the organization. Lucchese has more experience overall, and then Yamamoto, trails both of them in those two regards. So I guess I sort of just accidentally answered the question and said Lucchese might have a slight leg up, but not based on anything that I've seen him do.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's move on to the bullpen. To my eyes, there are four locks without considering Lugo because of his injury. I don't know if you're going to feel all four of these are locks, but I think that the top two certainly are, which is Edwin Diaz and Trevor May. I'm going to say Jairys Familia will at least start the season in the bullpen. I don't know if he makes it the whole season as a Met, but I think they'll at least start him in the bullpen. And then I would say that I'm going to put Aaron Loop, just because he's a lefty they signed this offseason. I think he will start this. He will start the season too. Who are the four sort of like locks you have in the bullpen?
Diaz, May. I actually think Castro is a lock because he's out of options. I believe
he is the next person on my list on my depth chart here. So yeah.
No, he's out of options. He's intriguing, and I guess you could argue he was bad in 2019 with a 4.66 ERA. That's not really what you want to see. But since the start of the 2017 season, he's been okay. And you can afford to have a couple okay relievers in your bullpen, even if he doesn't necessarily improve on that or whatever. So with the lack of options and a decent track record, I would have to assume that he's a lock. And Loop too, yeah, because they signed him. I can go one more. I think Familia is a lock for opening day as well.
Okay.
Regardless of how he looks through the rest of spring training.
So those we have the same five that we feel are definite locks for opening day.
Yeah.
Who were your bottom three?
Well, I think barring disastrous results throughout all of spring training, I think Betances makes the opening day bullpen too, whether or not that's the best decision. I know some people have sort of just wondered, oh, maybe they'll, I don't know, persuade him to do extended spring training or, maybe come up with a sort of vague injury, that kind of thing, get him a little more time, see if he can ramp back up and get back to being something like the pitcher that he was when he was one of the best relievers in baseball with the Yankees. But I don't know. My guess is that the Mets will be the Mets, and that guy with that major league contract will be in the opening day bullpen, and then all those other things might happen after he has like a meltdown in a game that matters. So I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but that would get us to six. And then those last two spots, I mean, it's really a toss up. So I'm just going to go with a couple of likable guys in Jerry Blevins, because he's great.
We are a pro Blevins show here. Everyone should know that.
Yes. a pro Blevins podcasting network at this point.
Yes, I believe so.
I would say I will pick with no degree of confidence that they will actually be the ones who make it, but I will just go with kind of my guys, Jerry being everybody's guy. And specifically because he brought back a revamped version of Green Man's avatar that he made for him upon his first arrival with the Mets. So I'll take Blevins and Hildenberger to be consistent with myself from earlier in this episode.
Fair enough.
With the caveat that there are like 10 pitchers who have equal odds, but those will be the two that I take in our little exercise here.
Okay. I am going with, I also have Jerry Blevins in there. I just think that they're going to want two lefties and Blevins makes sense, I guess. Plus his long hair looks hilarious to me. I don't know why. As a long haired gentleman myself, it shouldn't be hilarious to me, but for some reason his long hair looks very funny to me.
Yeah, it's so dark.
I know. I couldn't believe how dark it was. He looks like somebody wearing a wig of like a goth person. So it's funny to me.
Right.
Then my last two spots, I do not have – I think that they're going to pull a – oh, Betances is hurt, and so he has to stay in extended spring training. Sorry, move. So I don't see him coming up. I don't see him making the roster because he's just not been himself at all. I think that somewhere out there, Robert Gsellman has dirt on every Mets executive because he always seems to still make the bullpen no matter what. So I'm going to have Gsellman in there. And I'm going to go with Drew Smith for my last pick because I really like Drew Smith, and I think that it's time he gets an extended look. And I don't. There's nobody else to me that that is like significantly better than Drew Smith at this point. And so I think they're going to give him a shot. So that takes us through the pitching rotation for each of us. I think we can all pretty much agree on Alonso, McNeil, Lindor, Davis, McCann, Nimmo, Conforto, and Smith as the sort of starting eight, with VR, Pilar, and Nito as the and Guillorme, I suppose, as the four-man bench. We still have that fifth spot because of the 26-man roster, rather, being the law of the land right now. So who do you have as your final man on the roster?
So this is the one that I would say I was most indecisive about. Mm-hmm. And I remain that way.
Same.
But I will give it an answer right now.
Okay.
I think it would have been Martinez until he got hurt. And,
agreed.
You know, Franco is still a free agent, so we can't pick him at this time. I don't know. I feel like there could be somebody weird. So I will go with... I don't want to go with Almora. So that's what I'm trying to avoid here. And that's nothing against him other, you know, he's 26. Maybe he didn't completely lose the ability to hit at the major league level.
That presumes he ever had the ability to hit at the major league level.
But he had two pretty good seasons of like league average hitting. Sure. And then, you know,
I'm mostly just teasing, but yes.
I'm stalling. So I will go with... It's not logical, but let's just say Malik Smith does something that stands out in the next couple of weeks. Why not?
If this team didn't have Jonathan VR, I would have said Malik Smith too. But VR has a lot of speed, and so I don't know if you'd keep Smith. I mean, first of all, there's also too many Smiths in the team already. But I don't know if Malik makes the team based on speed when VR is, I believe, ahead of Smith in terms of like active players with stolen bases. I believe it goes Billy Hamilton, Jonathan VR, then Malik Smith. If I'm not mistaken. So
that is a good point. I guess I'm going with like, I mean, look, if I was placing a bet in.
You are for one beer.
Well, yes. if I was placing a more significant bet, I wouldn't monetarily. Mm-hmm. That is, I wouldn't necessarily pick Smith for this slot. But it's sort of like the equivalent of a March Madness bracket when you just make a choice because it's fun.
Sure. Sure.
So you know, if Malik Smith can be 2018 Malik Smith and Jonathan VR can be 2019 Jonathan VR, then that's one hell of a duo on the bench.
That's true.
And it would be nice to see the Mets torture other teams with stolen bases occasionally. Yes. I'm not somebody who's like hung up on that, but I know Mets fans are. And Trey Turner annoys the shit out of me. So, you know, it would be nice to have a couple guys who could do that to another team if they can get on base, you know, in the same inning or same game. So, yeah.
What that would hell? Be fun. That'd be fun.
I'll go completely contrary to all of my beliefs about the type of baseball player I like in making my pick here. And is there a good Smiths like album cover that we can Photoshop if there are three Smiths on the team?
That is an excellent point. That might... I might now be rooting for Malik Smith for that exact reason. And I'm not even the Smiths guy, but it's just the joke is too good. All right, so I sort of narrowed my choices down to three. My three I was considering were Almora, because I think he's likely the one, even though I think with Pilar, he's almost totally useless on the roster, but they signed him, and so that counts for something. I thought maybe Caleb Joseph, who was signed to a split contract as a catcher, maybe that 26th man makes sense to be a third catcher. But neither Nito nor Joseph is particularly offensively a threat. Like, I think if you had a backup catcher who could hit a little bit, who you'd want to use as a pinch hitter, then it makes sense for me to carry a third catcher. But I don't know if that necessarily makes sense. The only other person, though, who I think has a shot, maybe, and this even seems like a stretch, is Jose Peraza, who has been playing a little bit in the spring and who played a bevy of positions last year for the Red Sox in the shortened season. And, you know, again, just with the team's versatility, it kind of makes sense that if you're going to bring somebody else onto the roster, they should fit into that sort of mindset. And so Peraza could play basically all the Guillorme positions plus left field. Again, the Mets don't need another fucking left fielder, but you understand what I'm saying. But I think of those three, I think I'm going to have to go Almora just because I want that beer. And so I'm going with the safe bet here. But I hope it's not him. I hope they sign Franco or some other interesting player for that spot. But, you know, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah. 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 No, no. It's an interesting collection of players. Oh, hold on. I'm not. Okay. This doesn't count for our exercise.
Okay.
But they have so many of these minor league signings who have been interesting, and I'm shifting back to the bullpen. But Aroides Vizcaino at least has looked good enough early that he probably has a shot. So I'm not modifying my roster picks, but I'll just throw it out there that, you know, I want to be on the record.
I was really close to having Tommy Hunter as my last bullpen piece for similar reasons, because he pitched a decent inning yesterday. You were driving during that, but he looked all right yesterday. He walked two batters, but the first batter – He just got a bad call from the umpire. He looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've talked in the past about how the Mets never have, depth. And this year they have a ton of depth. So, you know, that's, while it may not be the player you want, there is a, I feel like every position this season has a better backup in place than almost any position a year or two ago.
Yeah, and I will say that when you are lacking in upper minors players who you think are options to fill in or to get promoted and you know, have these prospect pedigrees and all that, when you don't have a lot of that at the upper levels of the minors, it is nice to be able to get a collection of guys who have some major league success. Obviously, and look, they did bring in a trade Khalil Lee, who is a prospect in his own right, and probably the most interesting outfield prospect, at least in the upper minors, to start this season. So that kind of player coming up through the system, you know, it of course is much more exciting and has a higher ceiling than a guy who has major league success in his not too distant past, but it, I don't know. It's nice to have those options. And for the players who do have the ability to opt out as a fan, you hope that they don't. You know, you hope they stick around. The minor league season, at least for now, is on, I think, on track to start in early May. So there's sort of a little bit of a weird zone in between the start of the major league season and the minor league one. But having those kind of guys, if they're willing to stick around, either working out in Florida or pitching for one of the minor league teams, it's a nice thing to have.
Well, here's my question. Do we know what guys have opt-outs?
Off the top of my head, no. I'm going to guess that some do, but I don't remember specifically hearing that any of these minor league signing guys had them. I mean, it might not get reported all of the time.
Usually those things are reported, though, aren't they?
Yeah, well, yeah, if a guy is signed like a loan, but I think half of these guys were announced in one day.
You know? That's true.
Like, that's how the Mets offseason started, and everybody was like, oh, that's actually, for like a bunch of minor league signings, that's actually a pretty good list. Let's see if Kotz has anything specifically listed.
Yeah, because I don't necessarily think that I've seen any of that. And if there aren't a lot of opt-outs for these guys, then the Syracuse team is going to be really stacked with guys the Mets could use. And that's what you want out of your AAA team, right? AAA is never really, very rarely does a well thought of prospect spend a ton of time at AAA. Usually AAA is the guys who are just trying to squeak it out and show the major league team what they have, or they are depth for the major league team. And so I think that the Syracuse team could actually be an incredibly useful team. I mean, someone like Sean Reed Foley does not excite me at all. But Sean Reed Foley, I would think, is better than Corey Oswalt. And so the fact that they went out and got like four of Sean Reed Foley's between, you know, Eichhoff and Yamamoto and Lucchese, you know, and Reed Foley himself, like the fact that those four guys now all slot in before your Corey Oswalt to the world, that's a really nice thing to have.
Yeah, it is.
Any Kotz knowledge you can drop on us?
No, the only there isn't anyone on that page that has a minor league contract and an opt out listed. So again, there may be some, but if there are, I don't know about them.
Right. All right. Let's get to our music pick. Chris, what do you have lined up for us this week?
So I love old music, but it's nice to have a couple new releases recently, one of which I'll use now. Altın Gün, a band that's Turkish and based in Denmark, if I'm remembering that part of their bio correctly. It might have a couple people from both places in the band. They were a band that I think I recommended one of their earlier records, and they just released one called Yol, Y-O-L. And it's very good. I started listening to it in the first three songs. I was like, where's this going? Because there's definitely a little bit more like electronic instrumentation there, but you know, it gets into a groove, and then once it does, I appreciate all of it a little bit more. So. Although I wouldn't at this point put it, you know, at or above the previous couple of records of theirs, it is good. I'm enjoying listening to it. I had picked up a pair of speakers over Facebook Marketplace over the winter, and it sounds really good on that. So that like gets a little extra bonus. So yeah.
Yeah, you last recommended them in episode 28, according to my spreadsheet.
Okay. What episode are we on?
Today is 53. So.
Okay.
Almost exactly half the run ago.
Yeah. No, they're a fun band, and you know, we had the pleasure of seeing them at Desert Days, which was probably, you know, that album recommendation probably came right after that. And yeah, live music when it's truly safe and makes sense for everybody. I am looking forward to seeing them again.
Yeah, I definitely, this week I've been thinking a lot about live music and how much of a bummer it is. And actually, live music kind of fits into my pick. This is a sad pick. I'm going to warn everybody, it's a sad pick. A couple weeks ago, I got word that former guitarist for Frank Black and the Catholics, Dave Phillips, passed away after a 3-year battle with cancer. Dave was he played with Robert Pollard from Guided by Voices in what I saw that band, and I knew Dave Phillips. I was a big Frank Black fan, but it also had Jason Narduzzi and John Worster, who now play with Bob Mould. They were in that band as well, as was Tommy Keane, who's another unfortunately now deceased musician, but one of the most incredible backing bands of all time. They were called the Ascended Masters, I believe, was what Pollard was calling them. But he played with Pollard for a little while, and he played with Tommy Stinson in one of his post-replacements bands called Perfect. But Dave Phillips, just a really sweet guy. I met him a few times at different Frank Black shows and was just very kind to an overzealous young fan, and really sad that he passed away. And so I've already recommended 2 of the 4, maybe even 3 of the 4 Catholics records he played on. So I'm going to go with a different album. I'm going to go with the album by Perfect, which was Tommy Stinson's band. It's recorded in, I think, 97 or 98, but didn't actually come out until 2004. It's called Once, Twice, Three Times a Maybe, and which is a terrible album title, but that's okay. I won't hold it against them. the album is like just really, really catchy, fast, punky power pop. Exactly what you'd expect from a Tommy Stinson project before he joined Guns N' Roses, which, again, that still blows my mind that a member of the Replacements was in Guns N' Roses for, like, 15 years. That's crazy.
I will admit that I did not know that.
Really? Yeah, Tommy Stinson played bass in Guns N' Roses from, like, 98 to maybe, like, 2015 or something?
Wow. Okay. As somebody who – and I'm not, like, a Guns N' Roses hater – but they were dormant for so long, and the constant rumors of, oh, they're going to do a thing, they're going to do a thing and all that. Like, I was just never
in
on that level.
No, I mean, I can't blame you. I wasn't either. I got to pat myself on the back here because I guessed 98 to 2015, and it was 98 to 2014. And that was a total shot in the dark guess from me. Again, somebody who owns zero Guns N' Roses records. But there was a time when Guns N' Roses had in the band a member of The Replacements, Nine Inch Nails, Primus, and Buckethead. That was a thing that happened for a long time, and I don't know how that was. That seems like just there was a glitch in the Matrix, and all these random musicians wound up in Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, it really does. I'm disappointed Wikipedia doesn't have one of the members of the band graphics at the bottom of the Guns N' Roses page.
It doesn't?
No. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hang on. There is a list of Guns N' Roses members subpage.
Oh.
That's what you
want.
Oh,
there it is.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things on Wikipedia.
Yes, exactly.
Tommy, wow. Okay, I will also admit, I'm not proud of it, but I knew for a long time that The Replacements were a band that I should like based on other things that I did.
Sure.
But it's really been like the last 5 years, maybe even last 3 or 4, but it's been more recent that I've started to fully appreciate them.
Sure.
So I wasn't I saw Tommy Stinson come out with Wilco when they, I think it was the first Solid Sound I went to, and they covered everybody. They did a cover set on the Friday night, and it was a whole lot of fun. And he came out and played with them. So I've seen Tommy Stinson play in person, but at that point it was like I knew a few Replacement songs and didn't fully appreciate. So
right,
yeah.
But yeah, just again, like just the insanity of that. But anyway, that perfect record is really, really great. It's a it's short, it's sweet, it's really, really nice. And Dave Phillips, a great guitarist and pedal steel player. And yeah, I'm a big Pixies. I'm wearing a Pixies T-shirt right now, but I'm a big Pixies fan. I'm actually a bigger Frank Black solo fan than I am Pixies fan. And his Catholics time is my favorite period of time. And I always hoped that one day he would do a reunion with that band, but they'd have to do it without Dave Phillips now, and that's a bummer. So that's my pick. Perfect. Rest in peace, Dave Phillips. And as always, thanks for listening, folks. We are going to be probably taking next week off, but then we may be back almost weekly, I would say, from there on out going into the season. Please check out the rest of the Amazing Avenue podcasts, which are now ramping up in similar ways. We have, I'm going to go through the week. On Monday mornings, we have From Complex to Queens, our minor league show, hosted by Steve Saipa, Thomas Henderson, Lucas Vlahos, and Ken Lavin. We have a pod of their own, which is every Wednesday at this point, maybe every other Wednesday until the season starts, hosted by Allison McKay, Kellyanne Healy, Linda Surovich, and Maggie Wiggin. We have Unformatable with Rob Wolf, which comes out every other Tuesday. That's Rob solo. I don't know how he does that, but he does such a great job with it. And then there's us, and occasionally we'll have an Amazing Avenue in conversation, which is me or Chris, or me and Chris talking with somebody interesting about the Mets. You can find season previews, game threads, news, everything you need over at AmazingAvenue.com. Find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. He's on Twitter, Chris McShane. I'm on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets.